Mr. Benedict D'Souza, Rule 7. Mr. D'Souza, how did the Japanese treat the Eurasian community?
Like I said, they were skeptic about the country of origin, whether we were Europeans or not. And again, I'm referring to the first 3 months or 6 months after the capture of Singapore. They looked at it, they didn't know who we were, whether we were Malays, whether we were Indians, and then I doubt whether they knew any other nationality. See, they were all soldiers. They were not from any tertiary education people. So they didn't worry. All they knew was just Chinese, Malays and Indians. When you say Eurasian, it didn't ring a bell at all. If you said Thailand, all the more. So they as long as we when approached and when we answered, we didn't have the accent of what they thought was a European, then we were in good hands. We were quite all right. But if we tried to say, well, you see, I'm just come back from there, I don't know, we would have got a slap. You know, no making colonial things.
Did you know of the Eurasian Welfare Association during that time?
No, I didn't bother.
In the beginning, how did the Japanese restore law and order and other essential services?
As I said, after the military moved off, the civilian authorities took over, and gradually they restored order by opening up shops, supplying food, supplying rice and sugar, salt, and it was not long after that they started to print a newspaper called Shonan Shimbun, and in that they gave news, of course, of what was happening in the West, all to their own benefit, you see. And whatever they wanted to tell us, give us orders, you know, information was there. As to, I quote you one thing which was very good on their part. They told us how to avoid getting beriberi, and that was to eat a lot of green chilies, a lot of garlic, a lot of beans, and things like that. And tauhu, bean curd, you know, things like that. And, well, I believed them. And I was coming in for beriberi. So, I believed them. I ate a lot of green chilies, cooked with our noodles in the shop. I ate a lot of tauhu. And the Chinese tauhu in the chili has got a lot of garlic. Good. So, and it was very nice. We were always hungry, because whatever we were taking was not nutritious, you see. We were living a lot on turtle meat, and mostly on turtle meat. Whatever beef we could get, we didn't know it was beef, it could have been buffalo, but we enjoyed it. And the poultry was getting skinnier and skinnier every day, so finally we dropped that, you see, and lived on whatever we could, and it was usually turtle meat. Fish, if we could get it. Usually, freshwater fish. And we live like that.
How did you get your supply of this foodstuff?
We had shops selling them, and we had what we call some kind of ration card, like given to a family. We were allowed so much. Of course, there were a lot of other people doing the wrong thing, you know, coming up with false cards and things like that. But we lived by the book, and we survived, because we had about 6, 7 or 8 in our family. We survived. That's all.
Was every community being rationed, or only the essential ones? Like
only the essential one. Of course, the market was different. You get your poultry, you get your meats from there. The main things, like, you know, rice, sugar, salt.
Do you remember how they go about giving out rations? Did they have to register all of you?
Yeah, we had a card, handwritten card, you know. We didn't have computers those days, so we had to queue up, or we called it lined up, line up, and wait our turn. The queue could be very big, very long, I mean.
How frequent were you given your... Do you have to queue up for your rations?
Yeah, we had to queue up for our rations.
I mean, was it a weekly or monthly kind of...
It was a weekly one.
Was there a shop that was specified to, for each
yes.
district?
Well, in Newton area, we had, as far as I can remember, only one. As far as I can remember, one shop. And I think it's still there. Just as you come around Newton Circus from Cross Road.
Do you remember the name of the shop at that time?
No.
Do you remember that after queuing up for your rations, how would you...
Cut it.
The serious fee for the shopkeeper to give you
your share? He'll make a note of it. You'll see how many people are there, whatever. It just was a tick and tick. So many caddies per head times 8. Well, that's what you got. That's all. Whether he was underweighing us, we wouldn't know.
What about the prices for this?
At that time, we were still on with British money and some Japanese money.
Were the prices fixed by the Japanese authorities for the rations?
I cannot remember, but I think it was fixed by the shopkeepers.
Do you remember how did you get your, for instance, your supply of rice? Did you use a sack to carry it, or did you?
Well, we had to bring our own pillowcases, or gunny bags, or whatever we had, and we. There was no means of transport. In any case, we didn't need it because it was very close to us.
What about other food like meat and vegetables?
On the market. And that is, we had to pay the price they asked.
How was the supply like for this food stuff?
I can't remember. So long ago.
Was it sufficient for...
No. But we had to make do with it, make good with it, either to supplement it with... My sister was a very good cook, so we had to supplement it with something else. And we used to get, in addition to our meats and fish, we used to get turtle meat. It was very cheap. And... we had to make good with that.
What was your daily diet? For example, what did you have for each of your meals in a day?
Well, in the mornings, as we normally did, we couldn't afford eggs, not like now. I have one egg every day and bacon. We just had bread and coffee with butter. If we could get butter, we used to keep our butter very, 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 very... we should dole it out very sparingly. As long as you could get a taste of butter, that's your ration. Because we had to make it stretch and stretch. Then we came to know some very good Japanese civilian people who used to give us rations. They liked us, they gave it to us. And these were the people who just happened to pass by, or we befriended in some way or the other. I can't remember the details now, but I remember one picture very clearly. He happened to come down from the bus right in front of our government quarters where I was staying in. So he spoke to me in Japanese, and I answered him, and he said, "Very good action." He meant accent, of course, because I was trying to put on, you see. And he came in, he saw some statues in front of the house, our pictures, and Christian, yes, Christian, and he was very nice, and my sister was a very good actor, very nice, but you know, our stomachs are not nice, and what do you want, and all that, and he gave us food. We brought rice and all that, and we made friends. Some or other, all of us had our own friends. And then I got a job.
What about your lunch and your dinner? What would you have?
The usual. Rice was our staple food, still is. And whatever we could get our hands on. We had already started on turtle meat. Vegetables were in abundance, so we had plenty of that. And beef, fish, if we could get it. There was no such thing as crabs and seafood those days, no seafood restaurants. So we just made good with whatever we could get. And my sister was a very good cook. We could get pork, and she used to get pork and the bones, pork bones, and keep it in the fridge, and she could make a very nice Chinese soup dish. We ate it, we were happy.
Was the quantity sufficient for each person?
Initially, yes. But eventually, as I said, the food was not nutritious, because the pigs were underfed themselves. The cows were underfed. So we were eating underfed things. We could eat now and 2 hours, 1 hour later, feel famished. As if we never had any food at all.
Did the situation improve or deteriorate later on?
It deteriorated. As the days went by, it became worse and worse. So much so, when you went to Albert Street to eat, you saw beef there, you wouldn't know whether it was beef or whether it was a snake. It looked like beef. But we could get vermicelli, we could get noodles. And whatever was supposed to be pork, looked like pork, we closed our eyes, nose, no ears, and we ate thinking it was pork. And my favorite dish those days was at night, eating what do you call, gubat mihun, I think, Albert Street, famous.
Were there a lot of hawker stalls during that time?
Well, there were a lot of hawker stalls, but what they were selling, we didn't know. Now, noodles were not the kind of noodles we get today. They were see-through noodles. They were very thick, they're very light, and you could see through it. So you can eat a plateful of it, go back home and feel hungry immediately on arriving home.
Were there a lot of people eating at these hawker stalls?
Well, I'll speak for myself. At opposite our place, there were two or three coffee shops. There were a lot of people eating it. Same old thing. And we used to frequent Albert Street every night because it was close by to where I was working. And there was, as you would see today, you know, or up to the time they got rid of Albert Street, the hawkers, it was crowded.
Any Japanese visited these stores?
Oh, yes. Military as well as civilians. Anybody with Wellington boots was supposed to be somebody from the military. He could be a civilian also. They were just fond of walking about that way.
What about the prices of this foodstuff and food that you can get from hawker stores? How were they like?
Well, they were within our means in the beginning, but gradually when they started printing money, the prices went up and we could barely afford to have our two cups of meat, which we normally did. We just make do with one cup or one plate fried meat.
Do you remember the price of the...
No.
For example, a plate of meat.
I won't commit myself, but in the beginning it was within my means. And later on...
What kind of... were there any kind of substitutes for your food, like bread or...?
Yeah, in place of wheat, we had what we call another kind of brown wheat. We used to call it ragi. Used to bake it. As long as it's fresh from the oven, you could take it and eat it. But you keep it for a few hours, it turns to stone. Almost like stone. So we used to toast it. We didn't have a national toaster we have today. You know, the old-fashioned way, like a barbecue. And that was our toast. And it was more palatable. And in place of sugar, we had what we call brown sugar. And we call it jaggery or Gula Melaka, sugar from Malacca. That was good. And we had to live on that most of the days. Brown sugar in our coffee. And I'd rather go without coffee. And many a morning before going to work, I just go without coffee. A glass of water, that'll be all right.
Do you remember whether you had to grow your own food?
Yes, we were advised to do that. And we had a small little backyard. My brother-in-law was very good with his hands. And we planted our cucumbers, our chilies, and a few other vegetables, where we lived on that. And the manure was, of course, human manure. It worked. We didn't care about what we ate, as long as it was palatable. And they did advise us also to take the vegetable called tapioca and sweet potatoes. We could either grow it or get it. It was quite cheap. We were advised to mix it up with our rice, cut it in cubes, mix it up with our rice, and in so doing, our plate will look, you know, heaped full. But you were not eating so much rice. But it was very good. I liked it. We had that. And another thing we had quite a lot in Singapore before I went away was spinach. It was not the local spinach. It was I can't get the name now. It was purplish and maroon in color. I just can't get the name. When you boil it up, it becomes slimy. Well, I never cared for it much. Now let me think and see what other substitutes we had. No, I don't think I can remember much, and I don't think we had more than that.
Who advised you to grow your own food?
The Japanese.
Where would you get the seeds?
We could purchase them from the shops. And my brother-in-law was quite a good chap for that.
How about other basic necessities like clothing?
there weren't many shops selling clothes, and if they did, it didn't suit us. We had quite enough of our own, so we didn't bother so much about clothing, and we didn't worry. No, that's all. I don't think we never had. No, I can't remember whether we had a shop selling clothes.
How were the living conditions during that time? What was the standard of living like?
It was okay for one and all. We went down together. Whether we had the money or not, we all sang together. Because even if we had $1,000 to go to market, there was nothing in the market. That sort of thing. If I had $10, I'd have nothing. Unless we could have got it through friends, or we made good with the Japanese and got it through them. Or suppose we worked in a restaurant, then we had food from there. That was about all.
How about other aspects of life during the Japanese occupation period? For instance, the transport system, health conditions?
The health conditions in the beginning were not so very good, but very quickly they brought it back to normal. We got the health department moving, we had the anti-malaria department going, and they kept Singapore quite clean, quite disease-free. Well, we never had floods to mock up the drains and things like that. They were not as you see now, but nevertheless they were not in bad shape. We lived in a very clean environment, especially where we were staying. You know, in Newton, it was quite okay. We had the drains being swept there by the health people, and it was quite open, quite nice.
How about the transport at that time?
Well, we had old buses run on charcoal and petrol. I don't know whether charcoal is done in petrol or diesel, but and they were all packed. Very cheap. Very, very, very cheap. But it was just, find your way in. And you're lucky you can get your way out also. They were hanging out on the doorsteps, just like after even very recently. The recreation is concerned, there wasn't much. We didn't have any nightclubs, except we had some restaurants where they had music. We had one or two cinemas going, and most of them were Japanese films. They were quite okay. Where entertainment was concerned, there was nothing much. You entertain yourself at least for the first 6 months, 10 months.
Have you been to any of the? Have you seen any of the Japanese films during the?
Oh time? Yes, I did see one or two, and especially I remember very clearly the one about the fall of Singapore, how they took over and things like that. Because it was a horrible film, cheap stuff. But we did see that. Oh, I wasn't a very keen film goer anyway. But I think I did see two, maybe three. That was about all.
The one that you saw on the fall of Singapore, was it a film show or was it a documentary?
It was the picture. It was facts and figures.
Produced by the Japanese themselves.
When they were coming in, most of it was in China, in Malaysia. Very vaguely I can remember.
how did you feel about the films that you have seen?
Well, I as a young boy, I think I did a lot of cursing. I don't remember much, but I know I felt very sad about it, and at the same time, I was keen to learn how they went about it, how they lived, how they fought, how where they slept. They had a very hard life, and the Japanese soldiers were really good soldiers. They didn't know the meaning of hunger. They didn't know the meaning of thirst, sleep. They showed the downing of the Prince of Wales. That I remember now. Those what we call kamikaze pilots. They just didn't care. All they wanted was this. They showed us how they trained these kamikaze flight pilots. That's why now it's coming back to me. Young chaps. All they had to do was learn how to sit in the plane, bring it up, how to release the bombs, and that was all. And kamikaze themselves. That's all. Now, as you it comes back to me.
Were there a lot of people who went to see these films?
Oh yeah, because there was no other form of entertainment. It was, quite a long break before we had it. So, let's go.
Where were they showing?
If I'm not mistaken, I saw it, I think, at the Cathay. I think so. No, wait, let me. Cathay or Capitol? One of these two. Oh, the Alhambra. We had the Alhambra in Beach Road. I'm afraid I can't be precise on that.
Do you know who were the people who usually went for such shows? Their background?
Oh, no. Just everybody and anybody.
Okay. Mr. D'Souza, could you tell us about the Japanese propaganda during this time?
Well, we only had the newspapers, which was called the Shonan Shimbun. Shonan for Singapore, Shimbun paper. And that was all. It was very poor print, very poor quality paper. But nevertheless, it did carry the message. And whoever had radios were not supposed to use them. Rather, you're not supposed to be seen using them. It all had to be on the quiet. And of course, we didn't have any earphones or earplugs those days, so we had to tone it down very low to get the news from the outside world. From Britain, if we could get it, from India, Indonesia. And I don't remember getting anything from Malaysia before it became Malaysia. But that was all, and we to depend on whoever had a radio to listen, or whoever did listen and pass on the news, which was again just word of mouth and not to be taken as authentic. And well, that was about all. But however, they did show a few pictures in the cinema halls about the wars, how the Japanese trained their soldiers, how they trained their pilots for this kamikaze act. And that too was a very poor quality film. That's all. We hadn't much. The rest was, as I said, well, what other news we had was only from word of mouth, that's all.